There were no count-ins. We're just going to hit it.
Let's do it. Let's go, man. I've been amped, man. It's been a long time.
Dude, all the preparation, all the work, all the money to get this thing cracking.
Oh, my God. It's crazy we're even here right now. I had to make a drink just to...
just to relax.
Yeah, just to get relaxed. Let's go.
I'm so nervous. There's nobody around. Well, here we go. Let's get it cracking. Welcome to episode one.
Let's go. Number one
of the podcast. Welcome to the Common Sense Podcast. I'm Micah.
I'm Jonathan.
And we're just two common guys with business sense. You like that?
I love it.
Did we try to be like in unison like that?
No, it just came. It just is. We're going with it.
Came naturally. Yeah. If you're listening to the podcast, we want you to give us a shout out. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/thecommonsensepodcast. Where can they find us on Instagram, Jonathan?
At Instagram, we're at the Common Sense Podcast.
Twitter, at Sense, C-E-N-T-S, Podcast. And then
they can email. They can email at info@thecommonpodcast.com.
The Common Podcast.
Did I say The Common?
You did say The Common.
I have, what is it called? Dyslexia or something. I think I read something, but I really didn't. She yells at me all the time, my wife. So let me get that back. Hold on. It's info@thecommonsensepodcast.com. Sense is plural.
You're the man. You did it right. That was great. I'm proud of you.
I'm going to need you to check that because I'm going to do that all the time.
Have a drink. Okay. So first and foremost, we want to introduce ourselves. My name is Micah Logan.
And I'm Jonathan Neves.
And we created this podcast because first and foremost, we're friends. And secondly, we're business owners. And so we decided that what we would do is we would create a podcast where we would share some common sense things that we've learned in starting our businesses to individuals out there who are looking to start their own businesses or who are running businesses right now. So really, this podcast are for people who are 0 to 5 years in business. We want to be able to share some of the stuff that we've learned in running our businesses. And we can just kind of qualify ourselves about what makes us able to run this podcast. Jonathan, you want to start?
Yeah, sure. So I own a construction company, heating air conditioning business. We have 9 employees now, and we're looking to grow even more this year. We do about 1.5 mil this year. We're on pace next year to do about 2.2 to 2.4. And more than that, I think what we've really seen is the ability to be resilient over the years, where many people I know would have gone out of business, and we're able to get ourselves out of holes, and not only just that, but also grow. And, you know, and I think it's funny because even to doing this podcast, I kind of go back and forth like, oh man, I don't know, like if I have enough experience or are people going to feel some sort of way. And time again throughout my just normal experiences, I have people coming up to me that know me or whatever. They might have their own business and we'll just talk, or I might be at some type of seminar or something. And they're like, man, like how were you able to do this in such a short time? Like, your sales process is so different than other places. You know, what did you do like to just jump out there and get out there? And it clicked. Like the more we were talking about doing this, I was just like, I think this is going to be money for so many people. Because I think podcasts today, they're always like, master your business. And it's for people who, you know, they're already doing their thing. So I think that's a good thing to start off by saying. If you're, you know, 10, 12, 20 years in the business, you have, you know, multi-million dollar business and fleets and all this, this might not be the podcast for you. Would you agree?
I would agree. I think that our goal is to really hit home with individuals who are about to jump into the pond of starting their own business, but also individuals who have started their own business and who are looking to kind of grow to the next level. And I think that's kind of where we are. The wonderful part about us is that we're kind of in the daily grind.
Exactly.
To qualify myself, I've been in the health and wellness industry for 16 years. I own a couple of training studios, personal training studios. And in addition to owning those studios, I also do some other stuff like starting this podcast with you. But my studios, we're doing, obviously we do multiple six figures a year. We are opening a new location. So that's under construction right now. So just even though we have a previous location, we have a new location where we we're going to do the same thing with training. But at the same time, like it's every time you open a new location, it's like starting a new business.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? As you can imagine, it's like opening another office for you somewhere else. Sure. So we'll be working through that. And then, of course, you'll hear me talk about some of our maybe struggles or successes with that when we do this show right here. We also work with professional athletes, and so I travel around the country, around the world with professional athletes. We also do corporate wellness education as well, so we have a lot of stuff under our umbrella that we do for our business, and we also do mobile services, almost like your business, where we go to our customers' homes and we work with them inside their homes. So we have a bunch of things under the umbrella of our health and wellness business, but over the years, I've had to learn the fundamental tenets of business. If you ever read the E-Myth, then you know you can't just be a technician. You can't just be good at what you do. You have to be able to, if you want to not just own a job, but you want to run a business where you'll actually have more time eventually, you know, you got to do other things. And so I've had to learn the ability, the concept of actually running a business.
Yeah.
And not being in the business, you know, like every single day.
And it's funny you say that, because that's like so prevalent in our industry, in heating and air conditioning is... You'll see companies that have 30 plus employees, and then you'll see a bunch of companies where it's the owner and a helper, and that's their business. And that's fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. But I got tired of that pretty quickly, where I realized, you know, if I want to take vacations, I want to have time off or whatever, it was kind of impossible. And so now I've just got to the point, 7 years in, where I've actually, like, I could take vacations and I have people doing things and I can delegate tasks where I'm working my way out of the business now. And it's amazing. And that's kind of, again, more of the stuff that I want to try to help people to do too, because whether you're looking to get started, I think sometimes entrepreneurship is so glamorized today that a lot of things that we're going to bring are from a different spin, like the entrepreneur life, what to expect of being an entrepreneur, how's it going to affect your family, how's it going to affect your health. Those are things you don't really hear about a lot of times. People just kind of glamorize the life and things. And then on the other side, though, how do you get those things that are so glamorized? We can talk about it because we're doing it. You
know? I totally think that both of those things are important, because the reality is that running a business is about, it's a microcosm of relationships and life. You should get some of what you need, but also you should get some of what you want. I think it goes both ways. And so you should plan for some of what you need and some of what you want in business. So let's talk a little bit about what listeners should expect from this podcast. Because when you and I were thinking about putting this podcast on and creating it, one of the things that we did in doing research for the podcast was actually listen to other business podcasts, specifically small business podcasts. And what was the common theme? Do you remember what we talked about when we heard it? Yeah, basically. It was so boring. It was like, you would listen to some of these business podcasts and they'd be like, you remember that voice in Peanuts? Wah, 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 wah. That's exactly what it was like.
It really is. Oh, man. You know, so one of the things we did that was hilarious that you put me on is you have a friend who has a Star Wars podcast, and you were like, yo, listen to his first episode, listen to the latest and hear the difference. And so I went back. I'm like, wow, like it's night and day. Like, I'm imagining this is going to be the same with ours. We're going to look back and be like, oh, my God, look how different
it was. If you all hear toilet flushing, it's because this is the first episode. Of the podcast, so we don't know exactly what we're going to expect. His wife may come down here with a screaming baby, like someone could flush a toilet, but you got to start
humble
somewhere.
Beginnings. Yeah,
that's right.
But yeah, so it was night and day, first episode, last episode. Then I go on some of these, I'm not even going to mention the names, but I go on some of these business podcasts. I listen to the first episode and listen to like the 300th episode, and it sounds exactly the same. I'm like, guys, really? Like,
exactly, it's the same open, it's like. All you can sense is like, you know, the news segment with the world spinning. It's like, and then they start talking. Boring. Well, this is Walter Cronkite. That's what they sound like.
Yeah.
I think we wanted to come at it at a different angle. So our goal was to actually come at the podcast from an infotaining angle. And so you're going to hear, listeners, we're going to joke around. We're going to be a little sarcastic, but you're still going to get takeaways from our podcast. We're also going to have great things for you to listen to, like We're going to have segments that talk about specific things that you should be doing or you can be doing. We're going to be talking about funny things that I think that we enjoy in general in our life. So hang with us because you're still going to learn a lot. And we encourage you to go to info@thecommonsensepodcast.com, our email, and submit questions to us if you have questions that you'd like us to answer on the air. When we're recording the podcast, we can do that. We can make sure that we can kind of just kind of give you a shout out about your answer and try to figure out if we can help you through it.
I think too, even not just that, but also maybe you guys want to have us talk about something in particular. Let us know. You know, that'd be great. We're always looking for new content.
Yeah, no, totally. I think that's all right. Like we want to make sure that we are that we're providing you with like top of the line content on a regular basis that you can kind of get behind and that you actually enjoy. So let's get to today's big ideas. So our big ideas for today, Jonathan, you want to introduce that thought?
Yeah. So I was just about to take a sip of my scotch. thanks, Micah.
No problem. Glad I could help.
I don't know, did you see what I just texted you here?
I didn't.
Anonymous phone on the Google. So, all right, let's talk about our big ideas topic. How do you know you are an entrepreneur? And this is a great question. Again, so many people want to be an entrepreneur. How do you know you're an entrepreneur? You got to have faith. Real entrepreneurs believe they will succeed and they will go all in. And I highly believe this. I remember when I started my company, I was working for a bipolar maniac, to put it.
Was he bipolar?
I don't know.
Diagnosed?
He's pretty insane.
He's pretty bipolar.
Yeah, he was insane. I have to thank him. I wish actually I saw him now because I could shake his hand. Because he pushed me into being my own business owner. Because
he fired you?
No. He was just working me to death.
Oh, okay.
And he was insane to his customers. Like, he was treated them so poorly. And I'm thinking to myself, like, how are these people like doing business with him? He's horrible to them. I remember one lady in particular, this Asian lady in Quincy, he freaked out on her, and I was at the office when he was yelling at her, hung the phone up, and then he's like, so you're going to her house? I was like, are you serious, man? So I go to her house to fix her air conditioning, middle of the summer. This is probably the problem in my industry, there's not enough, like, people, so she doesn't know what else to call because it's a heat wave, so then here I come, and she's literally shaking because she thinks I'm going to, like, freak out at her. And so anyways, I'm like, dude, I got to like start my own thing. So I literally just was like, I'm putting my 2-week notice in, I'm going out. And everyone, not everyone, but a lot of people in my family are like, you don't have any money saved. Like, what are you going to, like, how are you going to pay for your bills? Like, everyone's all worried about stuff. And it's funny, looking back from today, I really don't even know how we made it because, like, I was like, how did I didn't have any customer base. It's not like
should have been on the streets.
But that's what you have. You have to have faith. You have to just go out there and just get it. And I feel like even today, if I can link one thing to the success of my business, it's
scotch.
It is scotch at night. Yeah. Gotcha. After work for sure. But during work, it's jumping out there and just going and getting it done. There was times where my wife would be like, honey, like we need to bring in some money. Like, and I'd come home and be like, yeah, I just closed like $20,000 today. Like, you got to just go out and do it. And if you don't have that feeling, it's never going to work. Like, I'll meet so many people, for instance, they'll say to me, like, yeah, I have, like, a business on the side that I do after work. And I tell them, quit your day job. And they look at me like I'm crazy. And it's like, if you don't have that gut where you're like, I don't know how I'm going to provide for my family, keep the lights on. I'm not saying that you can't succeed. I'm just saying that your chances of success are a lot less. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that I take a lesson from Mark Cuban from Shark Tank whenever he sees like inventors come in or people with products or services come in and they say that, we're entrepreneurs, we would die for this product.
Right.
You know, we would sacrifice our firstborn for this product. And then he asks a question, did you quit your job? They're like, no. Oh, okay. Would you be willing to eat like ramen noodles every day for a month? They're like, well, you know, it's just like they're making like 200 grand, but then they're pulling in a salary of 130 grand a year. And it's just like, he's like, you need to be a little uncomfortable. He does not invest in companies with people coming in with ideas for people unless they actually are a little uncomfortable. I think there's something to that. I think as being an entrepreneur, there's something to that. When I started my business, it was kind of a similar thing. I got married the same year I started my business, and I wouldn't recommend that to anyone. It's kind of like death by a thousand cuts, to be honest with you. I probably should have went and worked for so many. I turned that phone off, if you don't mind. No phones in here. But like it was like it's like kind of like death like a thousand by a thousand cuts, because the reality is that, you know, you have to balance a relationship at the beginning. You have to figure I had to figure out how to be a husband, and I also had to figure out how to be an entrepreneur. And this was before I even read the E-Myth, and it was kind of hard. But I did take the leap of faith. I made just a few $1,000 my first year. It was not easy, because in my industry, in the health and wellness industry, it is very competitive. It's growing by the day, and it's almost like there's more people out there who are trying to get into the industry to help people out than there are people available to train. It's only about 6% of the population in America actually works with a trainer, and the industry grows in terms of facilities and people in it by like 21% a year. Hmm. Like, that's not sustainable. Like, there's going to be a bubble that bursts in my industry, I'm sure. But the reality is, I was up against that too when I first started. But I still had to take a leap of faith, and I had to make sure that I like all my ducks were in a row when I did that. I mean, is that kind of like that's probably like
what I you agree. Well, I think too the thing is. Especially in the beginning years, the stages that we're talking about for people, the advice we're giving, you're going to run into problems. Like, if you have that same level of faith that you had in the beginning, where, you know what, we're just going to go out there and get it. Now, I'm not saying be stupid and just jump out and do it. I'm saying, like, you did your research, you know, but a lot of people, they'll get, like, paralysis by analysis. And they'll just go, oh, my goodness, I have all this stuff on what I want to do. Go out there and do it. Like, make it happen. You'll figure it out. Because here's what the problem is. Now, you're going to run into an issue. And when you run into that issue, there's a reason why. What's the numbers? It's like 85% of the businesses fail the first year, and then only 10% of those make it, something like that. Like,
yeah, it's some major, some ridiculous number.
The reason why
marriage has a higher rating, I think, than people starting businesses. Yeah, I think you're right.
You know? And my point is like when you run into those problems, like I remember a great example. I was doing a job for vice president of Whole Foods, and obviously a huge duck job that we were doing. There was a ton of duck work, ton of equipment. Inspector came, he had a bad day, and he's like, I want all this duck work ripped out. Now, he didn't really have the authority to really say that, and eventually we didn't have to do it because another inspector came and said, this looks fantastic. But point being was, let's say I went ahead and did that. I would have just been like, I'm done. Like, I don't have the money to put all this duck. Like, the ductwork alone would have wiped out my savings account.
Right.
You know, never mind the equipment costs and the labor costs. Mm-hmm. But I had a leap of faith, and I had that faith where I could, like, we'll figure it out. We'll figure out a way to overcome this. And we did, and there was more obstacles just like that that you had to go through all the time.
But I think we have to be clear, though. We're not talking about taking a leap of faith without a plan, because that's just stupidity. We're talking about taking a leap of faith with a defined plan of action. And we don't want you individuals out there who are listening to this podcast to take a leap of faith. It's like, oh, Jonathan and Micah said, I'm going to take a leap of faith. I'm going to quit my job right now. Right. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to start a business. And I ain't got no savings. That's what they're talking about.
Start a what?
Start a business. B-I-T-ness. Fitness. And I just want to start it right now. Like, no, we're not saying that. We're saying that you should have a defined plan. Create a business plan. Create a strategy to get your money and your funding, your capital to start a business. And then we're saying after you have your ducks in a row, after you've done your homework, then take that leap.
Yeah. And it's the same way with this podcast. I mean, just like you said, I agree with you. This is a business for us.
Well, really the scotch is to cut the nerves, because there's no one here, but we're both really nervous for whatever reason to start this podcast. But the reality is, I think you're right. It's the same thing. We had a plan. We've planned this out for a little bit. We don't know how it's going to go. You know, we're thanking our one subscriber right now. But the reality is that we know that over time, just putting these things out, we wanted to do it for fun and see how it went from there. And hopefully we can help some people.
That's my goal for sure. And I know you feel the same. Because even to the person I talked to last week that was asking me questions, like, you know what? I'm going to give you a link pretty soon. I want you to go check out our podcast. Because all the stuff we talked about with the business planning, the manuals, all that stuff, the idea and everything.
Yep.
You want some more? That's what the whole point of the show is going to be about.
Yep.
And that's true. And they'll hopefully empower somebody to make that jump and go for it. I'll take a little bit, actually.
Want a little more?
Yeah,
let me hook you up here, man. Yeah, so taking that leap is important. It's important to you. It's important to the business. It's important to just your self-esteem. You know what? I went to a business seminar once, and the person who was giving the talk there, he said, I would rather at the end of my life fail huge in a blaze of glory than to never have taken that step in the first place.
Completely.
Like, if you're going to fail big, I mean, if you're going to fail big. It's like it's like borrowing money from someone. Why would you borrow $100 when you can borrow $5,000 from somebody?
Yep.
Right? For something.
Yep.
And so I left that talk and I was like, man, this is so ridiculously awesome. Like this concept of just failing big. When you take that leap, don't be scared to fail. Failure begets success. And unless you fail, you're not going to be taught about what you need, the things that you need to do to succeed.
That's interesting. I think that's probably exactly what people are afraid of, that they're just going to fail.
Yeah, probably. But, and you may be right. What's the saying? I think Will Smith said it in one of his Instagram posts. I thought that was pretty cool. He said, those who say you can't and those who say you can are both right. But the reality is that without trying, you'll never know which one of those you're going to be. You don't want to have regrets.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with that. I had two failed businesses before Green Energy.
Yeah.
That's how it goes.
That's exactly how it goes. And now you guys are doing really, really well. And I failed bigly in my industry a couple of times. I've closed a couple studios before I started opening up new studios again. It happens.
And that's how you learn.
I'll never forget the day I had to close a studio that I had. I spent so much time, 16 hours a day, getting the studio open. I had to do the construction myself. I didn't have the cash to pay for a contractor. I went on, I'm not even sure if YouTube was around. I just read the instructions, asked the local maintenance guy that knew how to put in flooring and some other things, and I did it myself. I worked 16-hour days, 6 days a week, for an entire month to get it open. And so that's just what I did. I remember when I closed it, the reason why I closed it was because ultimately I didn't understand other business principles, like the requirements for capital, what kind of marketing you need to do, how much money that you need for marketing to make sure that your marketing is successful to drive lead generation. And that's why we started this podcast.
I was thinking the same thing. This is the money right here. Like if you had this, you'd be like, yo, things would just be bouncing around like, wait, I gotta have this, gotta have that, gotta do this.
If I had a Jonathan and a Mike of my life back then,
say, let's go!
I would have been so straight. It would have been so cool.
Let's go! Let's get it!
It's time to get to the marketing machine. This is a segment in the Common Sense Podcast that we call the marketing machine. Is when we generate an idea for marketing or talk about a specific marketing thing that you can do to make sure that your business is successful and it grows. Let's get it cracking.
Let's go.
So today on the marketing machine, well, for this segment for the marketing machine, we're talking about your email list, the importance of email marketing in 2019. It is 2018 right now. It is December. It's Christmas Eve.
Yeah, it is actually.
It is. We're almost in 2019. But the importance of email marketing in 2019 has never been more important. Here's the thing. The digital marketing landscape is always evolving. Would you agree?
Absolutely, yeah.
And new programs come out, innovations, platforms are created. I mean, if you can probably guess how many apps are launched per day, it'd probably be like some like thousands, right? Yeah, crazy.
Absolutely.
And so while all those digital options have come out, the reality is, in my mind, the importance of email marketing has never been more important. And here's the reason why. So email marketing is important because these are people who actively have engaged in your business. These are people who have expressed specific purposeful interest to try to engage you in a product or service business, whatever your business actually, however they service. And so because these individuals have engaged you from the beginning, that means that you have them at least by the ear. And so when you have them by the ear or you have their attention focused on you, you want to take advantage of that attention. And so email marketing is a great way to do that. And here's how I recommend that you do it. And of course, Jonathan, you can chime in here in a second. But so my recommendation is to do, if you're going to email someone, you don't want to start off with a sale. So if you have a list of like, let's say like 1,000 customers, you've serviced many hundreds of people, maybe thousands of people at this point in your business. And so the reality is if you always came to the people who you've serviced with your HVAC company with only a sale, oh, this week is 20% off, this week is 30% off, like they become like callous to that.
Yeah.
Right? Like they don't see the sale. Even if you have a sale, they may not even see it. But there's something that's actually worse, I think, that could happen if you continue to market with discounts, is that you create a value shopper in your business. So it means that that person begins to stop looking at you as the go-to person with expertise and begin and instead looks at you in terms of how much money can you save me? And that is a problem because when you have emergencies in your business, it's so important because it often means that someone doesn't have heat, maybe something's flooding or leaking. The reality is that I would rather have someone who I'm spending a little more money on with expertise that knows what they're going to doing, knows what they're doing and can fix it the first time, than someone who doesn't know what they're doing at all. And so when you're emailing your list, I believe that you should always offer content. So you should offer, for instance, more content emails than you should offer promotional emails. So for instance, in my case, it would be, here are a couple of tips to get you motivated to go work out. In your case, I would offer something like, here's a couple tips to save you money on your heating during the winter. And then I would give content emails like that. So if in a 7-day week, I would email my list maybe only once or twice a week, and then 75 to 80 to 95% of those emails, they need to be content-based. So content, 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 and then the next email should be promotion. You know, I think that's important.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's funny because this is something that we have been starting recently, and I'm kicking myself because when I realized how many people we had on our email list, we have over 3,000 people on our email list that we have not been actively
That's cash, bro. Oh,
it's crazy.
Straight cash, homie.
Yep. And it's funny because the reason why we started it is because we had a lot of customers that we would talk to that would ask for it. They'd be like, you know, hey, when am I supposed to get maintenance done? Hey, when am I supposed to have you guys come and flush out this or do that or whatever?
They have no clue.
And it's like, why are we just not doing that? So I'm happy that we're doing it, but I'm also aggravated because this should have been years in the making. I guess this is a reason why we're talking about it now. Because
well, revisionist history exists because it's revisionist history. You can't go back and rewrite history. Right. But the reality is knowing what you know now, what would you do moving forward?
I would 100%. Talking about maintenance that they need, talking about green tips. You know, we do a lot of that now. We're exactly what you said, like how can you save X amount of money this winter on your heating bills? Allergies, you know, we do a lot indoor air quality. So we're talking a lot about ways to reduce airborne contaminants and just anything that can bring somebody information that they might not have known before, and they can get it from us. And like you said, that's where when our email comes up, it's like, hey, wait a minute, actually they keep giving me really good things every month, let me look into it. And then now we hit you with, hey, remember we were talking about the indoor air quality? We're selling a steam humidifier this month. It's normally $2,000. We're selling it for $1,700.
I'm about to be provocative, really provocative right now. You ready for this?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
He's sitting over there
drinking. I need to lubricate.
Go ahead. You did. I see. That's kind of interesting. Here's the provocative statement. If you're not educating your customer base, you are insane and you shouldn't be in business. You need to educate your business, your customer base, because if you're not educating your customer base, you're not a professional. Mm. You need to leave your customers better than when they first met you. If you're not leaving your customers better than when they first left you, it's insane to me. It's like when you go get your car worked out, you don't have to go through like the whole thing of how they fix your car and what happened and all the other stuff. But a good mechanic typically tells you the process they went through to make sure that everything was okay and why it's okay. Yep. And the reason why is because it leaves you with peace of mind. You know when you left there that the person knows how to fix the car, so you're not worried about whether or not necessarily they're actually screwing you. At least you don't think about it, you know, until you get the bill. And then you're probably like, oh, yeah, probably shouldn't have got here. But no, but the reality is that people think about price less when they feel like they're dealing with a professional as opposed to someone who's like fly by night, you know? And so with email marketing, what happens is email marketing allows you to position yourself as an expert in your field because people will start valuing you for your knowledge, but they'll also start to trust you. And they'll start to like you. And so, like I got from a business coach, Bedros Koulian, who's a business coach in our industry, you have to have the know, like, and trust factor. Mm-hmm. So when people buy from you, you have to have the know, like, and trust factor. So how can you make your email marketing more successful in 2019? Well, here's one stat I think is important, which is that email marketing provides an average of $44 to every $1 spent as a return on investment. So if you're trying to tell me that there's no money in email marketing or email marketing is dead, then I would say that you're completely wrong. Because when you have the ability to position yourself as an expert and have people know, like, and trust you, then you're gonna do just fine. And so anything that returns a 44-to-1 ratio in marketing, I mean, I think that we should be asking questions like the how as an important, you know, instead of asking, is this really valuable or is this something that we could do, you know? The other thing, too, is here's a couple of tips for you if you're trying to compose an email campaign. You can leverage your text-only emails. So you don't always have to have an image. You don't always have to have some kind of like GIF or movie or something like that or video in your emails. Do not underestimate the value of simple text-only emails. Very few marketers despise text-only emails because of their simplicity, because they don't want you to settle for just a few, like just like something that looks boring. But yeah, the reality is that you're more likely to read and open something with a quick snippet in the email, something that's really quick and easy to read, than you are this long, flashy imagery and vibrant video content. And no matter how good it looks, the reality is like it may still feel like an ad to somebody, like you're trying to sell them something. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Whereas if you just have a text-only email, it's going to make them feel like they're talking to you. So like if they got an email from Jonathan, owner of, you know, the HVAC company, then the reality is that they're going to feel like you're actually talking to them, right? I mean, it's going to be like, well, he's talking to me. Like he wants me to know something.
Yeah.
And I think that the other thing too is that when you have content that's relevant to your customer base and time of the year, it makes all the sense in the world. Like it's December, right? It's December right now. We're not sending out get in shape for the summer emails right now. We're sending out emails about your goals for the new year and how to...
Hey, chubby, time to get in the gym.
Something like that. January. You know, the funny thing is I saw an ad one time. It was like an A-frame sign, and it said, tired of being fat and ugly. And then it said, why not just be ugly, right? I thought it was pretty good.
I like that.
I thought it was pretty good.
It doesn't apply to me, but I like that.
There you go. But the reality is that you want to be also the next thing I would say in terms of like, you know, feel free to have little snippets of text in your content emails. You should also have you should be relevant to the time. Like for you, yeah, like you wouldn't be talking about servicing thing for the summer because we haven't even gotten our first nor'easter here.
Yeah.
In Boston. Right. Like you would be talking about the winterizing your home and preserving your heat and stuff like that. Yep. All this stuff is way more relevant. And given the fact that it's not snowing, people can still run out to Home Depot and get something, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So I think that's important. And I think that if you ever need help, you should definitely talk to like an email expert, someone who actually has expertise in email marketing. And the things that have worked for us, the things that I will say in email marketing that you do want to make sure that you do have right. Subject lines are really important. Things that get people to open the email. So instead of having the flashy photos and videos in the email, the subject line is really what's going to get you to open, right? Like when you check your email, there are some emails that are probably marketing messages to you and things like that,
yep,
that you look at that you don't even open because they look like spam to you. And then there's some that may still be spam that you open because you're like, the subject line looks flashy, right? So subject lines matter. So for instance, if you want someone to open, if you own a bakery and you want someone to open your email list, right? You can say something to the effect of, if you're selling your chocolate chip cookies, right? Or if you're in Massachusetts and you have a gluten-free chocolate chip chai cookies with chocolate shavings, you can tell people in a subject line something like that, is that these chocolate chip cookies will blow your mind. See, that subject line gets people to open.
Yeah.
You know, that makes sense. As opposed to just bland, like just like a bland subject line, like, oh, we have chocolate chip cookies, get yours now.
Yeah. You know?
Does that make sense?
Yep, so, that's true.
So the email marketing is like, is really, really important. There's cash in that list. Don't leave that cash on the table. So now we're going to talk about the entrepreneur life. This is when we actually talk about things like funny stories or pet peeves that we have, just stuff that relates to being like real talk, like an entrepreneur, like what are some of the things we go through? What pet peeves do you have? Like what stories do you have? Funny stories that have happened to you as an entrepreneur. Jonathan, you want to give him a story, one of your pet peeves?
I don't know.
That's some good show prep right there. I'll start with mine.
I thought we were doing yours today.
We'll cut this part out of the podcast, don't you worry. So I call it beautiful baby syndrome. Beautiful baby syndrome is when a person looks at you from the outside and just assumes that your business and everything in your life is functioning really well because all they see is a glossed, shined up, baby powdered, wrapped up, cute version of what it looks like to be a business owner. Not knowing that you spent all your night in the bathroom on the floor with a screaming baby at 3 a.m. in the morning because the baby won't stop crying and you're pulling your hair out and you want to just go nuts, right? And
that throw it away.
that's probably not legal. Or like you get home and then the baby has a diaper full with you know what, and then like the diaper falls off and then they're tracking it down the hallway, which happened to me when my son was a little. But like this is the reality of parenting, but the reality of also running a business. People don't see the inside workings of the business. All they see sometimes is, oh, the finished result. Oh, he has all these trucks, all these employees, all this cash, all this, that, and the other. I call it the beautiful baby syndrome. And it irritates me because they don't know all the grind that went into even making it happen.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. I find it all the time. People, I was just going to play basketball the other day, and so I walked in and go, Jonathan. So he turns to his friend and says, "You know, Jonathan's rich, right?" And that's just this common misconception that everyone has, and it's funny because it's the first, like, there's some truth in jest, right? So yeah, he's making a joke, but like clearly a lot of people feel that way because right. I hear that a lot. They'll look at the car I drive, like, "Oh, you know, you're loaded," and it's like, no, like. We think differently about things. So exactly. I think that's the difference between being a business owner and working somewhere is our brainwaves on different channels or something. We think differently about money and purchases and things like that. So I may make purchases that people may not normally do or think about, but it's because my mind's in a different place.
Right.
But... It can be annoying, but like I said, I think on the other side of it too, like...
What'd you say when you said that?
I just laughed.
Did you?
I said, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you didn't take out like a stack of hundreds and start throwing up in the air like P. Dids, you know?
just let it rain on them.
Actually, give that back. I need that for payroll.
Yeah, right.
That's what it's like when you're an entrepreneur. Like, you're trying to make payroll and at the same time, like, it's just like, okay, yeah. Well, no, I do have the nice car. But, like, you know, this is my bonus for the year kind of thing, yeah. Right?
Like, but it's like you said, man. Like, people, you know, they'll see that. But they don't see, like, dude, like, there's a couple years where I was online looking at jobs. Like, yeah. Oh, where can I do to, like, just bring in some cash because I'm strapped or, like.
Same. I'm raising my hand right now because, you know, I've done the same thing.
Yeah. And it's like.
Like, should I work part-time while I'm supporting this business?
Yeah, you know.
Completely, by the way, gutting what we said earlier about not working at the same time as being an entrepreneur.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Or, you know, the other one is I'll have these headhunters calling me up like, hey, we have this position for you. Pays this much. And you go, pays how much? Like, what?
I'm in the wrong job.
Yeah, what am I? Dude. You know, and so like, but at the same time, you know, and even another one, I had a company that actually wanted to buy me out year 3.
Right, yeah.
And
I remember that story.
Yeah. And imagine if I did, I'd be like steady working there full time. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm so glad I didn't do that, you know? And so I think it gets back to the same stuff we're talking about, the beautiful baby syndrome, taking a leap of faith and saying like, nope, you know what? I got faith in my business, but it is a pet peeve. I just think that's what it is. Is people, they see Gary Vee, they see these other people talking about businesses, Grant Cardone and you know, Tony Robbins and
it's
all these
sexy.
Things. Yeah, it's very sexy. Yeah, it's very sexy. Oh, I get to make my own. People say that all the time to me. Oh, well, you get to make your own schedule, right?
Right.
Do you realize that I haven't made my own schedule and I don't know how many, even still, exactly. I'm like, I don't make my own schedule. Like,
you make your own schedule until that heat is broken and someone calls out and then someone quits on the same week. And then what are you going to do? Then you're back working 80 hours a week until you have to find someone to replace them.
I actually really don't, though. Like, my office manager and my receptionist make my schedule.
Yeah.
And I just follow that. And so even to that, people get aggravated. They'll call me and say, oh, hey, Jay, I need you to, like, you know, come check out this building that I'm working in. They want to get air conditioning. When can you come and meet me? And I'm like, dude, I'll make my schedule. Like, you're going to have to call the office. And,
right.
Well, I mean, aren't you the owner? And all these misconceptions. Like, dude, it's a well-running machine.
I've had that too.
I have it running like a machine, right?
Yep, totally. But it's taking years to get that way. My assistant literally just took a job somewhere else in California, so she's moving out there. And I remember giving her the schedule. I'm on a board in the town that we live in where we advised the superintendent, and I just handed her the schedule of dates and stuff for the meeting, and I just like, oh, go schedule this. I had someone email me like, oh, why don't you come down to Career Day and speak? And I was like, oh, okay. I'll come down to Career Day and speak, and then I just like forwarded. I was like, but you have to contact my assistant to get this done. And now faced with the fact that she's leaving, it's just like, oh, man, this is overwhelming doing your schedule again. Geez. But yeah, but people see that. Like, who do you think you are with your assistant and things? It's like, first of all, I used to schedule everything, and it's just exactly. It kills your time.
Exactly,
it kills your time. And so really what people see as, for instance, beautiful baby syndrome, which is, oh, you have an assistant, oh, you have this, that, and the other, are systems so that you can get out of your business, the day-to-day to your business.
Yep, 100%.
You know, and 100%. Like running your business without those systems would literally kill you, you know.
Yeah. No, it's 100%. I agree. So it's, like I said, it's a pet peeve, but I think it's just part of it. I think my hope too, though, is as time goes on, and a lot of people, I think this generation in particular, a lot more entrepreneurs will come out of this generation than in the past. You know, this millennial, a lot of millennials going into business.
Yeah, probably.
And a lot of them are just, they don't have the satisfaction that I think older generations did, where it's like, I'm going to work and get my pension and, you know, stop working at Ford and polish my Mustang. And I don't know.
Polish my Mustang? Is that what old people sounded like in like the 50s?
Yeah, they just like, you come home, your wife has like apple pie out, like 10 children. And yeah.
With the apron on.
Yeah. You know, it's just like,
why was she making an apple pie?
I don't know. Just like, you know, like in the cartoons, you see like the wavy lines with the smell. Yeah. He comes out of his Mustang. He's like, he smells the apple pie. And
that's very Mad Men right there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, 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 for sure.
That time in America.
And it's like, those times are gone, where I think people today are just realizing, like, listen, man, like, if I want to go out and get it, I just got to go get it. Like, no company's going to, like, there's no pensions. There may not be any social security.
May not.
Even 401k, you know, like, even if my CPA will just go up and down. Oh, you know, you got to put all this money in your 401k. I'm like, really? Like, I'm trying to put my money in real estate. Like,
yeah.
Like, what am I going to give you my money for? I have no idea what you're doing with it. Or even if I know what you're doing with it, look at all the corruption that's gone on in 08 with the real estate market. Mm-hmm. Like, nothing's for certain. A lot of people lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
I'm trying to put my money in real stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm a bit of a finance nerd, like a geek when it comes to that stuff. So I started learning a lot about that. But, you know, but the reality is like, you're right. You have to create your own economy in order to be secure eventually. Because if you don't create your own economy, you're subject to whatever happens to you. Like, if a company doesn't innovate and they go out of business because they didn't innovate,
you're done.
Like Blockbuster. Blockbusters make fantastic training studios now because they're all empty. And they're all 2,000 square feet.
Mike is going to be in all the Blockbusters.
Every Blockbuster, I will buy all the leases for the Blockbuster right now. You know,
you'll still see the Blockbuster right behind Next Level Fitness.
Exactly. Could you scratch out the name?
Yeah,
just paint
faded in the background.
Spray paint Next Level Fitness on it. It's pretty funny.
Hey, Blockbuster used to be lit Friday nights.
Except if you didn't rewind your tape.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Then they hit you with a $6 fee.
Yeah.
Remember those rewind things? They were so noisy.
The VCR?
Yeah. Like, no, but remember when they invented the things that just all it did was rewind the tape?
No.
You
guys were rich. Well, I don't know about all that.
No, Blockbuster had
it. I got you. Yeah.
No, not us. We had to rewind before we got there.
Like, yeah, we just bought this thing.
I can't afford that $6 fee. You kidding? For not rewinding the tape? And then they would put it in, and then it would like angrily rewind the tape for you. It was kind of crazy. It sounded so ridiculous. We got to a segment now in our podcast where we call it Fantastic Failures.
Speaking of Blockbuster and all of them, right?
Yes, it's time for Blockbuster Fantastic Failures. Now, this segment on our podcast moving forward, when you hear it, Fantastic Failures are going to be about ideas or businesses in general that had started, did probably really well, or in some cases did really well, and then they, because of various business reasons, they ended up failing. And we're going to talk about kind of what we have done to fix it. You may agree or not, but whatever. We're going to just kind of give our ideas about what we would have done to fix it, and then kind of go from there. So the topic we're going to talk about is the company Polaroid. And the theme of this Fantastic Failure is go digital or die. The reality is when you think about Polaroid, what do you think about? Shake, shake, shake.
Polaroid picture.
Ooh, ooh. Is that the? I don't even think that's the chorus. But you know you're good, right? When you have a product or service that is the name of whatever you're offering, like people call it, right? It wasn't, why don't you take a picture? It was, why don't you take a Polaroid? Remember that?
Yeah.
What about Kleenex?
Yep.
Hello, Kleenex, right? Can you pass me a Kleenex? It's a tissue. It's not a Kleenex.
It's true.
You know, that's how you know that your game is tight. So when people say that I want a next level, then maybe that will that might mean training. So, but while you and I were actually buying our first digital cameras, remember the PDAs? Did you ever have a PDA?
No.
You never had a PDA? No. I had a Treo. You remember the Treos? They were like the big, the palm thing.
Yeah, no, I didn't have one.
Man, I had a PDA. The thing was ugly as it was terrible. It was terrible. The execs at Polaroid were snapping and shaking their pictures into oblivion. So while everyone was shaking it, like Andre 3000, Polaroid executives, man, they were sinking their ship. They were sinking the whole Polaroid company. And they were doing it because they loved the brand so much. They thought about that brand so much that they failed to innovate. They failed to push the envelope.
That's it. Innovate or die.
That's right. Because people were going digital. Digital cameras, PDAs, phones with cameras in them. And finally, what happened to Polaroid is that they ended up going bankrupt in 2005. Imagine in 2005 with the invention of like the phones and the digital cameras and all the other stuff that people were actually still... Any summer vacation or any barbecue that you had during the summer, you would see families, 15 to 20 families, that would shake their Polaroid after snapping the picture. You know, that stuff worked in the 80s and maybe the early 90s and maybe the late 70s. But by the time 2005 rolled around, if you're shaking a Polaroid picture on a family vacation.
Yeah, you're ancient.
Yeah, probably. Imagine if you're on a cruise and you're shaking that picture on the deck. And then, like, a big stiff breeze blows by.
It's just, you know, it's so funny, though, with digital today. Like, you know, like, for instance, like, you know, my family, my mom, my brother-in-law, my father, like, everyone wants to see pictures of Elijah, my son. And, like, I'm just thinking about it now, like, oh, hold on, let me just shake this picture real quick and get some copies made and send it to, like, I just put it on, like, WhatsApp and, like, okay, here, everybody, here's, like, a full HD video of him running his face into a wall or whatever he's doing.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Like, imagine those same 10 people every time you have to shake the picture. We all know with kids, I have two kids myself, that by the time you get a kid to settle down to actually take the picture, they want to just leave.
Yeah, right.
They want to sit there. And imagine, like, 2005 is so recent for this company to have gone out of business.
Yes. I'm surprised at that number. Because I would think, like, so, like, all right, I guess that's probably the next segment, right? Like, my thinking is you guys obviously have, like, oodles of money. You have a crazy strong name brand. Like, you could easily take this and go digital, and you would have the masses just follow you because everyone already knows who you are. They're, like, know, right. Like, and trust. You can't get more than that. Like, you're calling your product by your name. Like,
exactly. Well, and then you cornered a market where people were taking Polaroids. Well, I guess there's two pieces of that market. One of them is like crime scene investigators where they take Polaroids of like murder scenes. But then the other, like actually the more lighter side of it probably was that market, what actually families that were actually having a good time, right? So you have an engaged segment of your market and you don't take advantage of it. You fail to innovate. And so this brings us to what would we have done to try to fit, if we're an executive on the board, if we're in R&D at Polaroid, what would we have done to shape the Polaroid future at that point in 2004, the year before they went out of business?
I'm not entirely sure what was around 2004 as far as like technology goes, but I would definitely, like, my personal opinion, and I'm obviously not the most technological person, but I would say I'd say develop a Polaroid app that you could basically, you know, shake it. Maybe you hit it on the screen and it sends it to all your family. Mm-hmm. Like, do something. Integrate it with Facebook or one of these things. Again, I'm not sure. Facebook was popping in 2005.
No, I don't think so.
No?
No. 2008, bud, I think.
Is it?
2006, 2008.
Well, they could have did Facebook.
Yeah, Mark Zuckerberg was like in high school in 2005.
Wow. See, I remember doing Facebook when I was in... college. So that's before I was married. So exactly. It was still for colleges, though, at the time.
Yeah.
Which is crazy early.
Yeah, well, yeah. But that's true.
We were still talking on email, chatting back and forth. Someone said to me the other day, man, you're old. So I didn't really think about that, but I guess you're right.
I was on the basketball court the other day. Someone called me old head. I'm like, dude, like, I'm not that much older than you. And then, like, my back hurt when I was, like, dribbling the ball. So I was like, oh, maybe I am.
He's on to something.
I think I was.
Say, what's up, OG?
So I think one of the things that I would have done is I would have contacted, like, the cell phone carrier, cell phone company, something like that. It then created the actual hardware for, I mean, if you already have the R&D in general that can make the lenses, the optical lenses, all the other stuff, I'm not technologically either. I probably don't know what I'm talking about. And maybe they did do this, but like invent the hardware that goes in the phone camera, change the future, find a way where you can, if you know that the digital thing is coming out, find a way to leverage that into instant pictures somewhere else, because internet was the thing back in 2005. So it would be easy for Polaroid to kind of like think about the future. How do we want to see people share photos in the future, like you're saying? And then, like, when you have this future mind, I think it actually kind of works out really well
for your company in the future. And I mean, even to that, like, maybe Facebook wasn't popping yet, but you can look and say, like, okay, like you said, like, obviously, you know, we're not gonna maybe jump behind the crime scene investigation side of it, but, you know, the family side of it, how can we fit in and really think about how our products could, like, we're not a camera company, you know what I mean? We're
right.
A family happiness. We're in a people business. And I think that's what they probably failed to think of, is they thought in the sense of we're a camera company.
Yeah.
You know, and we're not. And all of us are not in the, you know, like, you're not in a fitness company. You're in, like, a changing lives business, you know?
Exactly.
And you know, so it's same ideas. Is I think that they forgot what their real product was.
Yeah. And actually, in a future podcast episode, that's going to be one of my big ideas about the job that that your company does. Well, you know, like, what kind of service, even if you're in a service business, what kind of job do people hire you to do? And we'll talk about that a little later. But that name, Polaroid, it may emerge again. But at this point in time, that brand and that impact, it's gone. Fantastic, bro.
Fantastic failure.
It's gone, bro. It's a wrap, bro. It's no more, bro. They can't even find Polaroid. And I feel bad because I did know a couple of people that actually worked there. But, like, at this point, you know, it is what it is. So here we are. We're at the tail end of this first episode. How do you feel, man?
I feel good. You know, we got to get these chairs figured out.
Yeah, a lot of squeaks in these chairs. Yeah. We're sorry, people, if you are annoyed by the squeak in the chair. But we're going to figure that out because we can't be having these chairs squeaking this entire time.
Started from the bottom. I told you, it's humble, man.
It's a humble
beginning. I can't wait to post that picture on Instagram.
We didn't get any flush toilets, so that's good. but we did have a squeaky chair. It's John. He keeps shifting, but his back is hurting, to be fair. So we won't destroy him too bad.
That's what the scotch is for.
So we said at the beginning that we were going to destroy the podcast game. And our goal is, yes, we want to do well with the podcast, because what's the point of doing anything if you don't do it well? But the reality is that we want to help people. That's our goal. Our goal is to leverage knowledge and experience, and then ultimately we'll have guests and stuff that we bring on where we talk about small business for people 0 to 5 years in business. And like, that's our, I mean, honestly, that's really our goal. We really want to help a lot of people.
Yeah. 100%. Whatever we could do to help. I think too, there's a lot of mistakes to be made. So if we could help you not make some of them, mm-hmm. some of the ones that we had to make, I've had some mistakes that cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars at a time.
I had $1 million mistake.
Yeah.
You want to hear about it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I failed to do simple arithmetic when I was putting together training packages. And so what was happening is, instead of, like, so let's say that you came in and you trained 3 times a week, you know, 3 times a week, as opposed to 12 times a month, right? How many weeks are there in the year? 52. I was charging people for 4 times to come in. So in theory, that is a month. But what do we know about a month? Some months have how many weeks?
Oh, like, yeah, 5 weeks. And
4.5, 5 weeks, right? Yeah. And so I found out through a client's help, when he actually questioned me on it, that I was only charging people for 48 weeks by the end of the month, by the end of the year. So that cost me about $1 million right there. $1 million mistake over the years. Hundreds of people, charging them monthly, and then that the grand total of that was $1 million. So the question is, what would I have done with that $1 million? What do you think? Probably got us better chairs for this podcast.
I think that's another episode.
I think so too. So here we are. We're just two common guys with some business sense. We hope you enjoy this podcast. We're looking forward to the next one. It's going to be pretty sweet, I think.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait.
So until then, we hope that you have or use your common sense in your business practice. If you have any questions at all, you can email us at info@thecommonsensepodcast.com. Don't forget, you can check us out on social media. Jonathan, where can they find us on Facebook?
They can find us facebook.com/thecommonsensepodcast.
Instagram?
Instagram @thecommonsensepodcast.
Twitter?
Twitter @sensepodcast.
Show email. Want to try that one more time?
Yeah. It's info@thecommonsensepodcast.com.
Hurrah. All right. We'll talk to you guys later.
Peace.